On today's episode, we have the pleasure of sitting down with Sabine Kuhn, the co-founder of Talent and Truth, a social media and podcasting consultancy that focuses on supporting business leaders. Sabine has had a multi-country lifestyle and has transitioned from the hospitality and marketing industry to starting her own successful business. She'll be sharing with us her philosophy of setting an allowance for failure and how that has helped her in her journey. More importantly, we'll be delving deep into Sabine's business philosophy regarding selecting the right clients to build and grow alongside. Sabine believes that this approach creates a small yet high-quality pool of executive leaders whose brands are managed by Talent and Truth. So, get ready to gain some insights on how to build a successful business and manage executive brands with Sabine Kuhn. Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast, where Dan and Adnan peel back the onion on our guest stories and on each other, all in an effort to change the narrative of failure. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, I feel like we're changing the narrative here. So today it's me interviewing the two of you.
We haven't had this before as well, so I'm excited for this already and nervous. Yeah.
So since it is the Fail Forward podcast, tell me, what is your greatest failure, your best failure, your most successful failure? I'm curious to know.
I think one failure that is basically, the failure that I think I had in my life was the fact that I decided after college to just take any job that would offer me employment. And at the time, it was great. And mind you, it did some great things for me in my life. But it was only 5 years later that I realized this is not what I want to do in my life. So I think that failure is what allowed me effectively to say that, hey, I want to make a jump to move back home to try to build something for myself. And I think had I just focused on, you know, getting a job that maybe I was a little bit more exactly what I liked, but not my dream job, I may still be in that at that point where like, you're like, it's not bad, but it's not perfect. So you're in that middle ground where you never quit, but you never really enjoy it fully. So I think that was something internally that I look back as a failure that really helped me become who I am today.
Good answer, Adnan. Yeah, I think mine, I was going to say it's quite an easy answer, but I've failed quite a few times at lots of things. So there's so many answers, but I think there's a bit of a transformation I've gone through as I started talking to you a bit, you know, the starts have been about when I was living in the UK to move over to Dubai, but I was a huge people pleaser back home in the UK. And I think going through that kind of career of just trying to please everyone, I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be the best at what I did. I wanted to be recognized. So I kind of craved recognition. And part of that's still, you know, true now to an extent. But yeah, I just wanted everyone to like me. And I couldn't say no to things. And that got me in a lot of trouble. And I think the story I was telling you earlier about being burnt out eventually was I then, you know, had children and I couldn't do both. I could not sustain the career of just saying yes to everything. Literally burnt myself out once I started looking after the kids more and couldn't do it all. So that when I moved to Dubai and I become a full-time dad, and then suddenly my priority shifted to, you know, these kids are now, you know, I've been able to look after them. I didn't have the time back in the UK. I was, you know, racing around all around the country, stupid hours. And then all of a sudden they were my priority. And I think I've become more patient. And then I started saying no to things, you know, going out, I'd rather hang out with the kids or, so yeah, I think what I thought was a failure perhaps of, you know, giving up this career and being a full-time dad ended up being one of the best things I've ever done. And I think that's one of the greatest lessons I've had is to say no to things and yeah, to just not be a yes man like I used to be. So what a great intro to the Fail Forward podcast, and such a good question. It's one we've not been asked before as well, I don't think. So
Sabine,
I think it's your turn now. Yes. To tell us a bit about yourself, Sabine, and then I'll kind of, yeah, we'll go into how I met you and how we're here today.
Awesome. First of all, thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to speak to you guys and to learn more about your failures and a little bit about mine. I'm the co-founder of Talent and Truth. So we focus on personal branding primarily through LinkedIn. And I think that's how you and I met, Dan, is obviously through LinkedIn. So My business is Dubai-based, but I kind of live a hybrid lifestyle, which is 50% based in Namibia, which I'm pretty sure nobody will know where that is. It is just to the north of South Africa. And the other half of my life I spend in Dubai. So I kind of have a 50-50 thing happening there, which serves me really, really well. So I can kind of choose between wanting chaos and a big city and wanting peace and just absolute desert and nature and nothingness and no noise, no nothing. So I've been doing Talent and Truth for about 4 years now. Before that was across the Middle East, throughout Bahrain, Qatar, Dubai, working in different marketing roles. So working for hospitality brands such as the W Hotel. And then lastly, working for a very big beauty influencer based in the UAE, a beauty brand called Huda Beauty. So I worked with Huda Kattan herself, I think, who has now over 50 million followers on Instagram. So I was kind of employee number 11 at the start of a beautiful startup journey. And after a couple of years of doing that, I decided to move on and do my own thing, which is where I am today.
I'm guessing you've had a share of failures through that experience. Am I right?
So I actually did caveat this to Dan, is I actually don't, I'm not one to embrace failure. So I don't really live by this motto of failing is great or failing I don't see it as a blessing, to be honest with you. So I've always lived my life very cautious, very aware, very hypervigilant. So I've always been one to kind of like assess everything that could go wrong and do everything possible to mitigate things that could go wrong. So, I mean, not to say that I've never failed in my life, I for sure have, but I don't think I've had like dramatic things happen to me because I've always lived in the state of like hypervigilance that I've been able to, or I've tried to at least mitigate most things that could go wrong, specifically as it relates to like career and the work that I do. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a juicy story for you.
So what you're telling us is you're the one startup in the world that's hopefully not done gotten through any failures while starting it up? That is impressive.
No, I mean, look, also, how do you define failure? So I think, you know, with startups, you have your ups and downs. I think every other day I have a midlife crisis, or I'm just kind of losing my mind because you're kind of balancing, you know, new business with team members, with managing a virtual team, with cash flow, with everything. So, but I don't see it as a failure per se. For me, it's just part of the journey and it is what you have to do to kind of move forward. So, I mean, for sure we have things that go wrong, but for me, it's kind of, it's a given. You know, if you're going to start a company, you almost need to say, right, 80% of the things are going to work out, 20% is not going to work out. And I'm not going to sit and fuss over the 20%. I'm going to put a plan in action. I'm going to figure out how I can avoid it in the future. And that's it. I'm not going to sit and dwell on it. So, yeah, I suppose maybe I have had failures, but for me, it's not registered as failure. It's almost like I've made I've almost made an allowance to say, right, 15 to 20% of things are not going to go the way that I want them to. And I'm not going to sit and fuss over that. Instead, I'm going to focus on how I can avoid it in the future. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but for sure, things haven't gone perfectly well all the time.
Yeah. No, I love that concept of like an allowance, right? And things just are not going to work out. But do you spend time assessing and analyzing the things that didn't work out? How does that work in your own mind or with your team?
Yeah. So the way that I kind of operate is I don't stop reflecting. So I'm the type of person that will always reflect and always have ideas and ways to improve things. So let's say something did go wrong. My first thing is to obviously take accountability. If it is with a client or a team member or whatever, own up to it, figure out how did that happen? And then what type of processes can we put in place? Who do I need to hire? What technology needs to be put in place? Where did I maybe, you know, screw up? Where was I the bottleneck? So I really immediately try to figure out how I can avoid it in the future. That's my main thing, is I don't even like sit and focus, and I'm not, crying or anything like that. I don't cry over these things. For me, it's just like, shit, okay, what can I do now so that it does not happen again? Who can I hire? What, you know, what process needs to happen? What action needs to be taken? So for me, I'm more anxious about it not happening again than I am about the fact that it happened. So it's kind of like a different way of thinking about it.
And is that more because you don't want to let yourself down again, or is it you feel responsibility for the team that you just don't want that pressure for your team as well, perhaps?
I think a bit of pressure is always good. So I definitely think that for the team, it's good to have a little bit of pressure and to kind of know when things go well, that's great. And when things don't go well, then especially within our line of work, we deal with people's reputations. A lot of these people have a large audience. They are senior level leaders. So we don't really have much. We don't have that flexibility to make a mistake. You know, it's not like, you know, a small brand account that where nobody sees the content. These are relatively well-known figures. So we don't have this type of, I don't, you know, let things go lightly, but I also don't believe in bullying somebody, you know, if they did make a mistake. So I kind of believe in, well, ultimately it is my fault, even if it is another team member that screwed up. And for me, it is about figuring out how I can avoid it from happening again. So it might be that initially after that happens, we go through a small period of micromanagement. And then after that, we've created a new process. We've done whatever we could do to avoid it from happening in the future. So yeah, I think a little bit of pressure is always good, because if you just make it seem like it's totally fine and it's okay and we'll be good, then I think it loses the people lose their touch, or they lose their that little bit of, like, not anxiousness, but that little bit of like stress that you need to do a great job and to just double check your things before they go live.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like, you have a personality that's very detail oriented and probably very high caliber in terms of the product you want to deliver. Being also in a business where I have a co-founder that we balance each other out, and sometimes we just like amplify who we are. Like, how is it working with Samantha, your co-founder? Do you have different personalities, similar personalities? Like, talk to me about that.
So we are absolute opposites, which is great, because where I am I'm very structured. I'm very particular. I'm very detail oriented, where she's also detail oriented, but in a very different way. So I look for mistakes. She looks for the good things. So if I see a piece of content, for example, or if I see a process or something that's happened, I look at everything that's gone wrong or everything that's wrong, where she looks at everything that's right. And that's just, I don't know, it just is the way that it is. She's a positive person. I'm naturally very cynical. So I have to work really hard to be positive, whereas she has to almost work really hard to be negative, which we really balance each other out really well. And she's very, yeah, very creative. We just have completely different. She's very friendly, very outgoing. So she's kind of the type of person that will do networking, that'll do, the fun things, whereas I'm a bit more on the other side of the coin. So I'm kind of, I don't do networking. I'm not like an extrovert. So yeah, we just happen, I don't know how it happened, but we just balance each other really well with these kind of things and with the way that we work. So yeah, I'm always like the bad cop, she's the good cop. But I think the team appreciate it, and they know who to go to when they need certain things. And it's been how we've been able to kind of maintain a good standard of work, is because we do look at things in a very different way.
So for anyone listening, Anand and I are smiling away listening to you there, Sabine, because I think Anand probably agrees. Yeah. This is exactly the same for us as well.
Who's the Sabine?
Who do you think? You.
Yeah, for sure.
Dan is the Samantha.
Yeah, I am the Samantha. I think I was going to be called Samantha, actually, as well, if I was a girl. I don't know why that came up.
That would be perfect. Yeah. Sam Smith.
Sam Smith, yeah. So I wouldn't wear the outfit that he wears, but yeah, I think I'm that positive, you know, everything's great. The sunshine yellow kind of personality. I like to go out and network. Quite extrovert.
Sabine, I've never seen Dan stressed or negative about anything. Like, his car could break down on the side of the street and be like, you know, it's all good. It's all good. We're just having a good time watching the cars. I'm like, dude, you're supposed to be pissed right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think I've learned to become more patient. I think that's all calm in situations. Having been, I think, working for a company in the previous life in the UK where, yeah, things happened a lot and you just have to learn to deal with certain situations. But yeah, I think that's the person I've become. It's probably a different story when I've got the kids around me and they drive me insane. You probably see a fly on the wall, you'll see a different side to me there.
Yeah. Out of interest though, like, how does that impact? So for example, like, I know that with Samantha, for example, sometimes if I'm stressing, I need her to be stressed as well. So if if you're not the same level or similar level of like stress or upset, then for me, it like, it irritates me. I'm like, you should also be like pissed off, or you should also be stressed about this one thing. Not all the time, but sometimes I do feel that way. So I'm curious to see how does that behavior impact the other person's kind of like, yeah, feelings in a way, or their buy-in, their energy, their level of commitment almost.
It's a good question, Adnan. What do you think?
So there's two elements of my stress. One is the heightened vigilance, but then the drawback, that's a good thing. But the drawback is that I get slightly clouded judgment, right? Because you're worrying, you're projecting out in the future the worst case scenario. And what Dan allows me to do is he has that a little less vigilance, probably in like the detail, but he has none of the clouded judgment. So it allows me to kind of calm my negative forward projections out while still keeping the vigilance to like get into the nitty gritty details of some problem that we're facing at any given point in time. So I've actually never had an issue time when I've wanted Dan to be stressed as I was, because I felt most of the time like he got it, but he just, you know, still keeps a calm mind about it.
Mm. I think my stress comes with focus. I think that's always been a problem for me, because I think I am that kind of creative entrepreneur that I never thought I was, that I could be doing 100 things at once. And Adnan just says, just focus on one thing. And I'm like, yes, I need that. So I think when I feel like I'm getting stressed, because I know I need to be working on, you know, like the eat the frog, just work on the, you know, the most important task. Sometimes I can be out, you know, trying to design something else. And and Adnan kind of just reins me back in as well. So I think it kind of works, I think. Yeah, awesome. It's a good blend, and I can see how it's quite similar for you guys as well.
Yeah.
So, Bean, I was going to ask a question when you were talking about working with these kind of thought leaders, high level CEOs, and we've interviewed a few ourselves, and they're amazing storytellers, I think, for a lot of these guys that we've interviewed and ladies as well. But for you, when you're working with, you know, these high level execs or CEOs, and personal brand so important to them. So I guess you instantly just want to know who they are. That authenticity needs to come out. Do you think you're a good judge when it comes to meeting these, people, to be able to just really get to the bottom of, you know, are they telling the truth, and how do you find, you figure that out?
Yeah, I do. I like to think I'm a fairly good judge. I have once kind of made a mistake, but most of the time I am a good judge. I think it comes with being, I always make a point to be very present when they're speaking. So I listen to things, and I'm very lucky to have a very good memory. So I will recall every single detail you've mentioned to me. And I think the way that then subsequently we build trust is by mentioning these little details, your daughter's name or your wife's name, or the moment when your mother said this to you, or it's kind of just, I think that's how then subsequently we build trust. So I like to think that. I also do, when we do meet clients for the first time, we do take them through a series of questions where we dig into their industry a little bit. We want to get their opinions on the industry. We try to just gauge whether or not they know what they're talking about, whether they can confidently communicate what they're doing and what they believe, or where they believe their industry is going. So we do have a little bit of a test, if you will, in the beginning, just to see whether, A, do we like you as a person? So are you, do you respect us? Yeah. Do you appear to like respect who we are? Do you appear to respect the team? How do you communicate with us? First of all, do you respond, or do we need to chase you the whole time? So we go through that. And then secondly, we kind of look at their industry experience to see whether or not, because if a client comes to us and they don't know a lot about their industry, or they just seem very shy, or they don't want to say anything, it just makes our life so much harder. So in that case, we're like, you know what, it's not a fit, because there's just way too much work we need to put in to get you to where you need to be. So do the work, figure your shit out, and then come to us afterwards, and then we can help you. So we do this test in the beginning, because otherwise what ends up happening is we work with people that don't align with who we are. They, you know, life just gets, it's just too much time invested in these things. And it's just not a win-win. And I always believe that if you end up working for people you don't like, you will never give 100% service. You'll always begrudge it a little bit. You'll always kind of hold back. You'll always, you know, roll your eyes if they email you or if they message you. You personally are never going to perform well for people that you don't like. So that's why I try to always work with people that I like so that I can also bring my best self and so that the team can bring their best selves to the conversation. So yeah, it's an interesting one though, because I once made a mistake with my judgment and still struggling today with that. So yeah.
But it sounds that even though you make a small, whatever, your 20% tolerance of mistakes in judgment, you're willing to accept that that initial judgment of someone in the first 1 to 3 calls is a sufficient judge of whether you don't or do want to work with them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It also comes like, ultimately, I'm not here to, you know, work with friends. So for me, it's, I don't judge whether or not I, you know, whether I believe in what you're doing or whether I agree with everything that you're saying. For me, it's like, do I believe that A, I can respect you? Do I believe that you respect me? Do I think that you know enough? And do I somewhat believe that you're a good person? So if I don't believe that you're a good person or that you're going to detract value from the organization or even detract value from the rest of our clients, because we have to keep in mind that the people that we represent, it kind of becomes like an exclusive club. That's how we see it, at least. So if I'm allowing you into this club, I need to make sure that you're not going to detract value from the rest of my clients. Or if I had to put all of them in a room, that they're not going to be like, you know, who the hell is this guy? Or who's this woman? Or, you know, who's this character? So we always try to think, if they were all in a room together, A, would they get along? B, would they respect one another? So that's important. And once that test has been passed, then yeah, it's you know, we get cracking.
And do you feel that that exclusivity has actually drawn potential clients to you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it has. In the past, we've had, look, I don't think, I wouldn't want to say with this like exclusive club and people are lining up. We do have a wait list, but I also, you know, we have in the past had clients been like, am I accepted now? Like, will you accept me? Where we realize that they start pitching themselves to us, which is an interesting dynamic to experience where, you know, in the beginning of the journey, we were pitching us to clients, whereas now a lot of the times we see them pitching themselves to us and it's like, okay, this is pretty cool. You know, it's an interesting shift. So yeah, I would say yes, but I mean, I don't want to make it seem like, you know, like we've got long queues and we're the most wanted agency in the world. So we're still a startup and we're still quite humble and still trying to, yeah, figure out our journey a little bit.
Oh, I love that. Something I wanted to mention is also being is when, so how, going back to how we first kind of connected, I think through LinkedIn is, so yeah, going from my transition from a Danny the Manny looking after the 2-year-olds to becoming a marketing consultant and kind of wanting to network and suddenly just get out into the open world and start speaking to adults because I spent so much time with kids, but blessed for it. And I remembered I was like this like Labrador with a wagging tail just running up to people on LinkedIn just saying, hi, I'm Dan. You know, how I just genuinely wanted to get to know loads of people. And I think, unfortunately, you're one of them. I just like, Sabine, how are you? You know, but I think how I found you on LinkedIn was through a guy called Spencer Lodge. And going back to when I used to walk the dog, if I had time to myself, you know, away from the kids, I listened to a lot of podcasts and, he was a big influence on me, I think, when I moved to Dubai, because I listened to a lot of his podcasts and he just seemed like this gentle, like really nice guy that I felt I got to know him really well through his podcasts. But I used to see you messaging him and say, what's your relationship with Spencer like? Because I'd be interested to know.
He is, you're going to make me cry because I absolutely adore him. We've been working together for... Yeah, we've been working together almost for 3 years now. And he was, I think, client number 4 or 5. And it's just been a journey. We met right at the beginning of COVID. He was the first client, actually, that I called DM'd back in the day. So, we were brand new, didn't know shit. And I'd called DM'd him after watching one of his sales trainings. And he responded to me and he's like, I'm interested in your services, whatever. Can we have a chat? And so we had a chat, all went well. Then we had a second call where we were basically going to present a scope of work to him. And he was an absolute bulldog. So he was a bulldog. He gave me shit. And within five minutes, I was like, okay, this is, I could tell. I was like, this is not going to go anywhere. So then I said to him, I looked at him and I said, I can tell this conversation isn't going to go anywhere. Shall we just end it right here? I don't want to waste anybody's time. Like, I can tell by your lack of interest that it's just not a good time to speak right now. And he looked at me and he said, No. Let's carry on. I'm like, okay, cool. So then let's carry on. And I think so, since then he's kind of, we've respected each other. It's like we had that moment. He realized like he couldn't push me around. And since then we've just built up a beautiful friendship of love and hate, brother and sister, service provider and client. It's just, it's an amalgamation of many things, but I do have a lot of respect for him. He hustles really hard. He knows what he's doing. He's a great friend. There's nothing I could say that's bad about him. I care very, very deeply for him. So he's a great example of a client that's been around. He's experienced us grow from just two people to now 12 people. And it's just been a pleasure to work with him.
I'm so glad I got to ask that, because I've always seen a link between you two, and finally I've got to meet you, which I'm really pleased about as well. But just to be able to hear you say that is that I've always wondered, you know, that connection. And I just had a huge feeling from that, positive feeling that that tells me everything about what you do and who you work with. And yeah, that just completes, you know, what you do now. I think that's amazing. Incredible.
Thank you.
Sabine, we play a game at the end of every podcast, and we've recently started this. So I would love to play it with you if you're interested.
Okay. I'm game. Let's see.
So it's called The Meaning of Life. It's by a company called The School of Life. And it's purely just questions to get to know each other. It can be super silly or it can be super deep. And the way this works is, the way at least we've structured it is, you pick a card. You feel free to answer it. Obviously, if you don't actively want to, that's totally fine. And then you can decide either if Dan and I pick another card to answer, or if we answer the same question you answered.
Okay.
That's entirely up to you.
Cool.
So for those listening, I'm gonna put the cards out. And just tell me when, and I'll stop.
Stop.
That's your card, okay. Let's figure out what
the question is. If you wanna read the card out, Sabine, and then you can let us know if you wanna.
What do you really want to tell your mother and your father? Oh, wow. This is we're going deep today. Okay.
Wow.
I'll start with my father. I think what I really want to tell him, first of all, that I'm sorry. And then second of all, that I love him and that I appreciate what he's done for the family. So growing up, I think I was a little bit of a brat. You don't always realize the sacrifice that your parents make. You just don't realize anything, really. When you're a kid, you just want, and you don't understand why you can't have. And I think I never understood why I couldn't have things. And I think now as I grow older, I realize the sacrifices that he's made and the love and the care and people do the best with what they have. And I just absolutely took him for granted. So that's for my dad. And then for my mother, I think I would probably also say the same. So she sacrificed a lot for the family. She was a stay-at-home mom, and she's the type of person that will kill for her kids. So I don't think she ever realized how much we appreciated that, and I think now looking back, I just see that she was the mother that she would kill for anybody. She would kill for me or for my brother. There's nothing she wouldn't do for her kids, and she's always got our backs. And I think just again that appreciation and that that gratitude for what she's done for us.
Wow.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I bet you didn't think you'd get that question on this podcast or
No, not at all. What about you guys? Let's start with you, Dan.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, I will admit that card has come up before.
Okay.
And I did say at the time that, and I answered it as well, and I'll answer it briefly again, just so, you know, I'd like to share that again. But it's, I think one of the questions that people have as one of their biggest regrets is something they didn't say to their mother or father, I think, something they didn't say enough. So I think that's such a powerful question that needs to be asked more, just to kind of, you know, let people express what they feel about them, because we don't often, you know, phone our mothers and fathers if we have the chance to just tell them we love them, and just to say, you know, how we are, you know, grateful for everything. And, you know, I'd want my kids to do the same. But yeah, I'll start with my mum. Kindest person I've ever met, and I think I'm so blessed to get, I think, a lot of that, you know, how I feel about people being kind and giving from her. Yeah, you know, Christmas Day should be out cooking for the homeless, you know, instead of cooking for us. She's that kind of person. She just give. And she hasn't stopped giving now. So yeah, I'd just like to show appreciation to her and just say, you know, thanks for being so kind and for sharing that with me. And for my dad, yeah, just such a personality. And I think I've got one of the greatest things for him from him as well, is he's such a giving person. He'd give everything that he owns to anyone. And he's always been that type of person. He's gone through quite a rough, hard time the last few years. And I think he's coming out fighting, you know, from a rough time over the last few years. So yeah, for him, I'd just say, keep fighting, you know, have faith, it'll move mountains. And, you know, I believe in him, strongest guy I know. So yeah, that's what I'd say to him.
Nice. Now, what about you, Adnan?
So I would thank my dad, and I would show my appreciation to him for the fact that he has always been my biggest champion, regardless of what I do, be it the really smart, meticulously planned out decisions or the stupid, you know, whim of the moment things. If he sees that I believe in it strongly, he will do his very best, even if he doesn't agree with it at the time, to fully champion me. And especially hearing from people around me, friends and stuff, that not everyone just has the privilege of having that parent or those parents. So I want to thank him for that. My mom, I guess maybe it would be a piece of advice that I'd hope that she'd take to heart is, you know, one, okay, so actually it's twofold, right? One, I think I would tell her that I appreciate the level of care and love she has. I mean, she goes above and beyond. I definitely think that my mom would kill for her kids too, 100%. 100%. And like, her life is her kids. I definitely even see when both me and my brother were outside in the States, that those were the hardest years of her life, knowing that her kids were so far away from her. The piece of advice that I'd give to her, though, would be that it'll all be okay. Whatever it is, if you're worrying about something, you know, cooking, anything from cooking dinner on a given night to, you know, finances for the next 1 year, don't stress too much. Just execute on it and it will all be okay.
I like that. Wow. I actually resonate with that one as well. I had my mom, she sometimes transferred her stress around finances, etc., onto me. And I think just that obviously if you grow up in that environment, it turns you into a specific type of person as you get older. So yeah, that's a good piece of advice to share.
Yeah. But I also put myself in her shoes and I say, it's not like my mom's going to respond, oh, I hadn't thought about that, now I'm not going to stress anymore. I recognize, you know, you recognize that it's significantly easier said than done.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, Sabine, stop being cynical, right? Oh, thank you. Thank you, Adnan. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so easy.
Wow. So Adnan, do you have any final questions for Sabine?
So this is a question that we occasionally ask on the pod, and I haven't asked it probably for at least a couple of months worth of episodes. What would you want written on your gravestone, Sabine?
I actually, I had dinner a couple of months ago with clients of mine at in Dubai, and we had this conversation came up, and everybody had these like beautiful sayings and whatever. And when it came to my turn, everybody was just disgusted with what I had to say. And I'm so embarrassed to even like repeat it. But I truly believe what I would probably write is something like, do better, or like, you know, be more, or like, you know, I know it sounds really harsh, but just kind of, I think a lot of people just are a lot of people live their lives in an average way, or they're happy with just, you know, average work, or they're happy to just not give it their all, or they're happy to just kind of live in this small way. And I think my message, unfortunately, because I am a very blunt person, I am, anybody that knows me really well knows that I'm just kind of, I don't sugarcoat things. So I think my, what I would probably write is something like, be better or do better, or, but not within the context of like, you know, like you're bad, but within the context of like, you can do better. Like, come on, like stop being like, stop thinking so small. So unfortunately, yeah, I wish I could have written something a bit more, you know, loving and soft, but that would probably, those would be the words that I'd have on my gravestone. So
yeah. I love that, because
I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, no, I do as well. I think that makes total sense to me. So it must not make sense to some people then, maybe.
I mean, it's just, I'm just noticing how you and I, Sabina, are very much alike, and that, like, that's something I'd be down to also have on mine, because the way I see it, and I've told this to Dan, is it, there are two things. One, like, you're just really not doing the world any favors by stepping down to the level of the average human. And secondly, like, you recognize that you are ultimately a node in a network. And you, there is a very real consequence of you not showcasing and being your true potential, because it, you don't, you now are not inspiring the other people to do that, right? You can't tell someone to be more. You actually have to be more to inspire others to do that themselves. And not doing that is an active detraction on the world.
Exactly. I think for me, just to elaborate, for me, I don't believe everybody has to, you know, like chase career success, or it's not that. For me, it's a simple thing of, you know, if you're walking on the road and there's a piece and the person above, like in front of you, drops a piece of paper, like be better, like just, you know, pick it up or tell them to pick it up. You know, don't just ignore it. It's like these small things where everybody just ignores it because it's an inconvenience, or, you know, like, something that really bothers me is like when you're brushing your teeth, like just close the tap. Like, why do you have to waste water when you're brushing your teeth? it's like small things where I'm just like, damn it, like just be better. Like, you know what? Like, you, it's not about needing to be the next president or the next CEO. It's just small things that really get to me when I just witness like people choosing the easy way or the convenient way, or they're just completely unaware of what is happening around them. So I don't think everybody has to, you know, chase certain things. I think it's just small things where you have to just be better, just be aware, like stop being lazy. So that's how I kind of internalize that a little bit.
That is really powerful. And that's how I want to be remembered. The guy that held the door open for people, the one that let people in front of him in the queue, and, you know,
exactly.
Yeah, just those small little things that just make a huge impact on, you know, lots of people. Just smile at someone, you know, even if they're not having a good day, just, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think we focus so much on like the big things or the big achievements, but it really is just, you know, walking into a shop, greeting somebody, or cracking a joke, or, you know, like these small, small things, just saying thank you, saying hi to the taxi driver. I think that for me is how I perceive, like, you know, be better. It's just, you know, like you're literally just being lazy. So yeah, pull your finger a bit and be better.
After what you're saying, Sabine, like one thing in that same realm that really means a lot to me is, hey, you want to tell someone something? Fucking tell them. You want to, you like that woman's hat? You think that person has some great energy? Trust me, it will make their week. Your half a second of feeling nervous about telling them is so minor compared to the actual positivity you're going to create in society.
Yeah, that's a good one. I have to actively remind myself to tell people things, though. I'm the type of person, because, you know, you have like the love languages. For example, within the team, I have some team members that love being told when they're doing a great job, whereas my conditioning is, you don't have to tell me anything. For me, if things are seamless, then I know I've done a great job, but nobody has to tell me that I've done a great job. But obviously, everybody reacts in a different way. So I have to actively remember, like, you know, tell people that they're doing a great job, be, you know, outwardly, like say, you know, say what they've done really well, or give them feedback. So, yeah, I think it's easier said than done to always, like, you know, say what you want to say when you're just not wired to say anything. You think it, but you're not like actively thinking, oh, I wish I could say something. Like, you just kind of keep it to yourself. So yeah, but it's a good one.
Yeah. I imagine a gun to my head. I'm like, 3, 2, go. Okay, go, done. Otherwise, like, okay, I'm not doing it.
Yeah. Adnan, you are very good at just going up to people and just asking them questions. I've seen that, I've witnessed it. But no, I think you two are quite similar actually in your personalities and the way you kind of put yourself across. in business. And yeah, Samantha and I are probably very similar as well. But Sabine, this has been an epic conversation. I'm so pleased we got to, you know, have this chat. And thank you again for, you know, sharing your time with us as well.
Of course.
I guess the last question would be from me is, you know, where, if people were lucky enough to be able to join the waiting list, to be able to, you know, work with you and build that relationship like you have with Spence, how could they find you?
The best way is just to hit me up on LinkedIn. So I'm sure you guys will put my name somewhere, Sabina Kuhn on LinkedIn, drop me a message and I shall get back to you. That's the best way to do it. I don't have like the Instagram or whatever. I'm the worst social media agency owner, but LinkedIn is the best way to reach me. Anything else is unfortunately not going to work. Or obviously email or website, that kind of thing as well works pretty well.
Awesome.
It's been a pleasure, Sabine.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Find us at Instagram, failforward.pod. If you know someone who wants to be on the show or if you want to be on the show, give us a shout, DM us. We'll see you soon.